Welcome to Voices of the Valley, a series interviewing growers, entrepreneurs, educators, and technologists who are inventing new solutions for today's and tomorrow's challenges on the farm. Brought to you today by the Western Growers Association, supporting growers that grow the best medicine in the world. Find out more at WGA.com. Now here's your Voices of the Valley host, Director of Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology, Dennis Donahue.
Good morning. This is Dennis Donahue. Welcome to another episode of Voices of the Valley. And I think this is going to be a fun one. And I'm joined by my good friend and partner, Candace Wilson. Candace, good morning.
Good morning. And good morning to all of our listeners.
You and I are both really excited to welcome Detroit Hives to this particular episode. I've gotten to know them a little bit over the years. I'm glad we've renewed acquaintances through an event we just all did, Flight of the Honeybees with the Silicon Valley Forum. And so good morning to Timothy Paul and Nicole Lindsay and the founders of Detroit Hives. Good to see you.
Same here. Good to see you. Good morning to everyone.
Well, thanks for joining us. We're excited to talk to you two. But as you know, this is National Honey Month. And so we're interested to hear a little bit about that and how beekeeping and part of the celebratory nature of National Honey Month is to promote beekeeping. So why don't we jump in right there and talk a little bit about Detroit Hives, what you do, and how you founded it. I just think that's a great story, one of the best in the country. So let's get started there.
Sounds great. And once again, thank you for inviting us out here today just to be a part of the buzz. And happy National Honey Month to everyone. You know, September is National Honey Month. And, you know, bees work all spring, summer, and fall to make sure they have enough honey for them to make it over the winter. So most beekeepers pull or harvest a lot of their honey around this time. So this is a great time for people to not only make sure their honeybee hives are going strong before the winter, but also to make sure that the bees have enough honey, but also a little bit extra to share with the community and others that support the conservation of pollinators. So to begin, once again, my name is Timothy Paul Jackson, and I'm the co-founder as well as co-executive director for Detroit Hives.
And my name is Nicole Lindsay, and I'm the co-founder and co-executive director for Detroit Hives.
And Detroit Hives is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whereby we work to improve communities for people and pollinators by transforming vacant lots into educational apiaries and or green spaces. So we've been in existence for over 4 years now. We founded our mission May 23rd, 2017, and fast forward, we now exist in over 20 locations, partnering with the city of Detroit to revitalize vacant lots, but also to continue the conservation and education of pollinators by working to partner with community organizations and local schools. So originally, my background really didn't start in environmental science or entomology. Didn't have anyone in my family to introduce me to this space. You know, my background really originates from studying advertising and commercial photography, where I attended Wayne State University and a native-born Detroiter.
Yeah, my background's pretty much been in customer service, but I did attend Oakland University where I have a degree in psychology.
So those that are watching or listening are wondering, well, how did you explore this magical world of conservation, or what got you so interested in learning about bees, particularly in a city like Detroit, what type of setting that is? And it all really started from an article that we came across around the summer of 2016. The city was looking for residents like myself or nonprofit organizations or community block club associations to buy back many of its vacant lots in the city of Detroit. And the reason why is that the city didn't have a budget to tend to these vacant lots. See, at the time, our city had well over 90,000 vacant lots, and these vacant lots were causing an issue in our community, an issue around blight, around crime, and just overall lowering the value of the neighborhood. It really wasn't safe for children or residents or anyone to go up and down these sidewalks with these vacant lots. It was different types of just issues in our community. We saw this as an opportunity to give back, an opportunity to do something in place of these vacant lots. After all, at the time, they were going for as low as $100. We figured we can buy a vacant lot and do something creative to change the narrative of what people think about the inner city communities or what outsiders thought about the city with these vacant lots. We wanted to find a way to change that narrative. So we know in order to do this, we had to do something that was out the box, something that has never been done before. So originally, we thought about creating a peacock farm in place of a vacant lot, a place where we can provide touring or children in the community can learn about a peacock. Outside of that, we thought about an urban campsite where nature-deprived residents or out-of-town guests can explore an urban setting. This could be also a great opportunity to drive economic mobility in our community. And we thought about outdoor photography studio. With my background in photography and advertising, it would have been great to create a space for local photographers, for neighboring guests to utilize the space as a selfie environment. So if you have a family reunion, if you have graduation photos, or photographers looking to utilize, I would say, the natural scenery as a prop. So ideally, this particular space, every season will serve as a prop. There will be a prop for spring, a prop for summer, then you have one for fall and winter. It'll be an open all year round outdoor photography space. And then lastly, we were considering a community garden. This idea has been done before, but it could be replicated. And there's a need to have a community garden in every neighborhood to help combat food insecurity, but also find ways to revitalize vacant lots to serve as something meaningful and purposeful in your community. All of these were great ideas. We will have them on our vision board. We will talk over them. We will speak, you know, or just jot down great ideas about these projects. But in actuality, Nicole and I would go back to our day-to-day operations and just didn't have anything that really helped us push us into the next step. Around that same year of December of 2016, I suffered from a really bad cough and cold that I could not get rid of. I tried everything from home remedies. I tried over-the-counter medication and even went to a doctor whereby I was placed on antibiotics, but I was still dealing with this really bad cough and cold. So much so that my cough lasted over 2 months. From there, I pretty much was just hoping to get better and hoping to get rid of this cold, that nothing was working for me. I mistakenly went into a convenience store, probably just to look for some snacks and head back to my office. And then as I began to go in the store owner recognized I had a really bad cough and cold. And he suggested that I try local raw honey. See, I wasn't looking for honey. I wasn't looking for any of that stuff. I was just going to the store to get some snacks. And then my cough and cold was so bad that the store owner said, you know, you should try some of our local raw honey. It can get rid of your cough and cold. I didn't think it would work. So I said, sir, I tried everything from X, Y, and Z, and I don't think honey would do it. He said, this honey is not like most honey that you could find in a store or a market. Our honey is local, is raw, and I buy it directly from a beekeeper. And I simply asked him, what's so special about local raw honey? Because I've never heard of that before, and I for sure never bought anything from a beekeeper. He gave me this very long rundown on how local raw honey helps provide immunotherapy and helps provide antibodies if you're allergic to pollen. He also mentioned that when you have raw honey, it has microscopic traces of pollen to help with your allergies. But what really caught my attention is that he said honeybees visit flowers like dandelions and clovers, and they take the nectar from that and they process honey into that. And I just never thought a dandelion had anything sweet to offer, nor did I know that bees or pollen visit dandelions at the time. I just thought a dandelion was a pesky weed. So this caught my attention. It didn't look like most honeys you find in the store in a cute packaging with a teddy bear. It had a label. It had a location where you can purchase it from. It was also labeled as wildflower honey. I never heard of wildflower honey at the time. All I heard was pure honey or just like honey, but just learning so much about the localness of the honey, where you can buy it from, that it had a specific blend, and then the container was separately different. It wasn't like a regular container. It was crystallized, and it was in a different type of packaging. So it looked different, and it just had so much of a story behind it. So I began to purchase this honey, and I tried it for 3 weeks. And over the third week, it got rid of my cough and cold. Surprised by the benefits, I began just to research more about local raw honey. And a couple of things that caught my attention is that it's safe to consume if you're pre-diabetic or dealing with diabetes. And this is because it will not spike your blood sugar as would aspartame, high fructose corn syrup, or artificial sweeteners or processed sugar. That's a big win for me because I want to find ways to better my diet. I want to find ways to combat being pre-diabetic or dealing with diabetes. And honey was the answer. So when I tried the honey, it was so sweet and so delicious. I said, this is too good to be true. How can something be this good and so delicious be so good for me? So I began to read and learn more about it. And I learned that it's great to be as a topical solution. You can apply honey to the top layer of your skin, and it will treat that area if you're dealing with eczema, if you're dealing with a scar or a burn, it will heal that. And this is because honey switches being antifungal and antibacteria. On top of that, honey has a very long shelf life. It never expires. And that's because honeybees do a very good job at evaporating up to 90% or plus of water content from nectar, thus allowing honey again to be antifungal and antibacteria. Learning so much about this stuff, Nicole saw my interest in learning about honey that led me into learning how bees made honey. She said, how about we transform a vacant lot into a bee farm? And poof, that's where the idea of where we began to pollinate the idea of Detroit Hives, where we figured we can offer local raw honey to our community. We can use vacant lots as a means to support the education and conservation of pollinators while working to revitalize spaces for both, once again, people and pollinators. Fast forward again, we now exist in over 20 locations, partnering with corporations and businesses like Wayne State University, Gleaners Community Food Bank, the Ford Resource Engagement Center, and small community gardens as well, like Peachtree Parks, et cetera. Just working to create a space for people and pollinators while addressing the issue of blight and food security in our communities.
I know Candace has some questions about beekeeping in general. So Candace, why don't you kind of pick up from there? And boy, Timothy gave us a lot to think about there, but let's just jump into the basics. And Candace, you have some great questions on just beekeeping in general and how do you get into it and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you so much for sharing your story. I mean, you can kind of see your guys' smiles and enthusiasm and what an incredible journey over the last 5 years. I just think our listeners, you know, beekeeping in lots of ways has kind of become this like sexy topic over the years, but it's still, there's like mystery to it on what does it all include. And so can you kind of take us through this process of you buy a $100 lot, which you should have called me so I could do a little bit of investing, but you buy this $100 lot. And then what is the process of transforming this lot? Like take us through some of those steps.
Right. So when we first thought of the idea of creating a bee farm, we didn't know where to start. None of us had any background into beekeeping again, nor into buying land or developing land or finding ways to fund ourselves. So the first thing we did was pitch this idea to a local crowdfunding campaign called Detroit Soup. It was just an idea. We didn't have a business plan, nothing. So we pitched this idea and we won. We won $1,600. And that was enough money for us to purchase the land, to take beekeeping courses, and to acquire our first 3 beehives on this site. So what goes into creating a bee farm? First, you really need to discover a location that's best for them, a location that has forage for them, a location where you can create forage for them or wildflowers, a better environment for them. 2, it's always great to talk with your neighbors. So being able to talk with community residents, stakeholders, or community partners that can be a part of this project so that it works as a team effort to create this type of community, not only for pollinators, but also for the neighboring residents. So they are in compliance or that you are in compliance and working together. 3 is a design that's approved by the residents, a design that's approved by the city of Detroit, and a design that's approved by the bees as well. Bees love design and colors as well. So it all goes hand in hand. And, you want to chime in with anything else?
I think you pretty much tapped on the major things that you need to do. But most important is communicating with the community and the residents. Yeah.
I can't help but asking, because I mean, even though I've been an ag guy for decades, the city kid in me is a lot of your neighbors go, but what happens if they get out? I mean, that community engagement piece has got to be pretty important.
Yeah, and I think that's what it all starts with, you know, community workshops and educational forums, just to educate them on the importance of pollinators. And many people ask that question. They say, you know, are these going to be the same things that come to our picnics? Are they going to bother us? Are they going to sting us? What if someone's allergic?
Are they going to swarm out?
Are they going to swarm out? Things of that nature. And it all comes with education. So being able to educate them on their behavior, being able to educate them on our experience with learning how to manage that. And then tours, you know, being able to invite local schools, invite community associations and block clubs to come out. You know, we hosted well over 800 tours at our very first site. No one's ever been stung. No colonies have ever swarmed on anybody's property or had any issue. No one's ever been stung in the nearby areas, no pests, no nothing. You know, and that's been a true testament of the work that we've been able to do. In fact, so that the city of Detroit has awarded us a Spirit of Detroit Award for our project on transforming vacant lots into bee farms. And also we work to also create Detroit as an official bee city This has been in partnership with the Gerald R. Ford School of Public Policy, but also Detroit City Council.
But you always sweeten a deal with some honey too.
Oh, yeah, that's another great buy-in.
So I can't help but ask, you talk about sweetening the deal. So how quickly do you get involved in that bee culture where there are nothing but endless puns? You know, when I was looking it up to give you a quick call before the deal, you know, your little tagline, Detroit is the city to be, B-E.
Yeah.
I think you guys jump right in. How fast does that transition take place?
I think with that, I mean, that's just who we are. That's just, you know, with me being into the creative space already, you know, finding ways to just be your true authentic self. And that's where we find a way to communicate that, just being ourselves. But you have to look at our slogan, Detroit is a place to be. It wasn't always a place to be. It wasn't a place that you would see as a good place to live or be, according to media, for the most part, because we had a high rate in crime. You had the vacant lots. You had the abandoned homes. You had issues in our leadership at one point, like in some other cities. But Detroit, at one point, wasn't the place to be. And we wanted to change that narrative. So it's really about being your true, authentic self, finding ways to really make a difference. And it began to showcase and shine that way. So we always are finding ways to inspire the next generation of leaders in sustainability. How do you get others involved into your project? How do you make those people that are afraid of insects, afraid of being outdoors, afraid of wasps, or afraid of potential bees, how do you get them involved in your project? And that's what we really try to focus on, you know, because it's very easy. And we definitely welcome those that are bee lovers. But how do you get those people like me that then want to be outdoors? How do you get them to be interested in project? And we measure that on our impact on how we're able to protect pollinators.
Well, one of the questions, and you mentioned the word sustainability, and one of the things I was intrigued by, and, you know, Candace and I have been, I'll just use the easy phrase, in the produce industry for, you know, decades, me more than her. But when sustainability comes up, it tends to have kind of a rural cast to it. You know, that's going to be on the farm, that's in the country, that's where all that activity has to be. Yet so many of our customers, you know, at the end of the line are going to be, you know, large food service operators in the major metropolitan areas, you know, major retailers and that sort of thing. I can't help but wonder, is what you do something that our industry ought to think about? How do we introduce that into an urban setting, into the sustainability conversation? Because I've got to think some of the retailers we're familiar with, the food service players, even the restaurant chains, hospitality, you know, kind of getting this urban component to it seems to me to be a really interesting opportunity. Do you engage with retailers, hotels, et cetera?
Absolutely. But first, let me address that one question is, sustainability, when most people hear that word sustainability, you think about large rural areas, maybe large corporations. But let me be honest with you, quite frankly, with you, sustainability is not new, especially to the urban setting. With a lot of us, you know, it may come as a different word. It may not be sustainability for some people. To some, it may just be saving, coupons, being able to recycle. You know, I grew up from watching my grandmother. She would take a lot of the pickle jars. Instead of throwing them away, she'll reuse those jars or those mason jars, or they'll reuse certain type of oils and greases to use on different type of ways of cooking. So it may just be a different word or a foreign word to some, but saving or recycling is a very, you know, word that we've been using before. Taking clothes and passing it down to your children, to your siblings, instead of having to throw them away, you know, or different things like rubber bands, or you want to chime in on
that? Yeah, even using like grocery plastic bags, using those for many things, a new trash bag, a shower cap, you know, it has multiple uses that's been going on throughout my family and other people's family in the urban community. It just wasn't highlighted as sustainability.
Yeah, we were just saving.
Okay, well,
trying to stretch that dollar.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you spoke to food deserts, and, you know, given the prowess of honey, you know, even addressing that, you know, when you think about urban agriculture, you're in that game as well. And I know your work has not been limited to just Detroit in terms of other urban areas. So it seems like there's, you know, we may know the headline is sustainability these days, but it certainly seems like it could be a much more urban conversation than I perceive it.
Yeah, absolutely. And more broader. And to just piggyback on what the question you mentioned is how we're working with other small businesses or maybe possible corporations to promote that more sustainability in an urban setting. We partner with DoorDash to deliver local raw honey. Now, when you think of DoorDash or any type of food service or delivery food service, you're thinking about something like a cook prep meal, maybe some hamburgers, some french fries, some good fast food, but you typically don't think about a farm produce or anything like honey. Well, we've been able to partner with companies like DoorDash to deliver our local raw honey from our hive to your doorstep. Even working with small restaurants like Slow's Barbecue, where they sponsor two hives at our apiaries, where that honey is being used as a local fresh ingredient on the menu. And even working with local farmers markets to provide local raw honey to the community, or working with corporations and small businesses to sponsor honeybee hives. It's a great way they can play their part in sustainability as well.
Right. And just with Detroit having so many vacant lots, and the idea of us bringing honeybees into these vacant lots is part of that sustainability. So with Detroit having so many vacant lots, it is now this urban ag,
like a green space.
A green space where we're reusing and repurposing and reimagining these vacant lots into this agricultural world bought into an urban setting.
Yeah.
Are the lots where the bees are, is it a place where people can also gather?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So with there being so many vacant lots, you have pros and cons. The cons, of course, is that they can be left unattended to. It can collect blight, trash, broken glass, things of that nature, abandoned cars, etc. That's the cons of it. But the pros of the vacant lots is that no one spray any harmful chemicals on these vacant lots. They've been left unattended to. Very little to very little noise pollution on these vacant lots. In addition to that, you have a lot of native wildflowers that are blooming. You see tons of chicory, tons of dandelions, clovers, milkweeds, goldenrods. You still have a lot of fruit trees or planted trees that are from hawthorn apple trees that no one is tending to or either spraying any chemicals on it. So the University of Michigan and Michigan State University has conducted studies on this vacant green space. And he said that it's been able to boost and contribute to native bee populations, particularly the honeybee population. The bumblebee population. They've seen an increase in the bumblebee population due to the clovers on these vacant lots. So what we want to do is find a happy medium, being able to create native pollinating habitat for them, but also for people to where it enhances the environment. And that's where we found the happy medium in creating a design pollinating habitat that enhances the community for the neighbors, residents as well.
So the residents come visit, look at the flowers. We've had many residents that came across us and said they brought their children to enjoy the flowers and look at the bees and everything. So it's definitely a community space.
Well, it sounds like, Timothy, we were chatting a little bit before we got on the air about, the bees maybe going south for the winter and moving the bees. But just listening to your conversation or your mention of the University of Michigan, and then I'm putting my produce industry hat on, if memory serves, Michigan has a pretty fair apple deal and a lot of the blueberries, and those are crops that like bees to be part of the process. So it would seem like you have additional opportunities besides what's going on in the city.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And to speak of Michigan State, we just partnered with them. They have a project called the Detroit Partnership for Food Innovation Lab, located within the Brightmoor community. And we've been able to partner with them and host 3 honeybee hives there as well to assist with food learning and innovation.
Well, one of the things I want to make sure we discuss is, you talked about vacant lots and, there's sustainability from a community standpoint, a national standpoint. But, from a personal standpoint, I was always struck by, and you've mentioned it every time we've had a chance to visit, improving vacant lots has a lot to do with mental health, whether it's, personal or neighborhood or community, just how important that is and kind of the connection to what you're doing.
Well, absolutely. I say this before and I say it again. If you see trash, you feel like trash. If your community is heavily blighted, you're less likely to care about your environment, that particular area. Then it also translates to yourself. You're less likely to care about yourself. Over time, it has a very negative impact on your mental health.
It's true. There's been lots of great studies in the cities. I know New York has done lots of good work in that regard. So you're right. When people feel good about their environment, they feel a lot better about themselves. And when the bees feel good about their environment, they're feeling pretty good too.
We have a creed that says a healthy future for bees reflects a healthy future for humanity.
That's right. I love that. I want to go back to just some of the basics too, because I think the life of a bee is just, it's really kind of fascinating. Can you take some of our listeners through what's a typical bee? What's the life of a bee? Tell us a little bit, how do they spend their days? How much time are they? What's the process for making honey, you know, from beginning to end before it gets on a retail shelf or DoorDash is delivering it to somebody's doorstep? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Very lengthy process. Let's go ahead.
So what you have inside of a honeybee hive is a queen, worker bees, and drones.
And that's a colony.
The worker bees, which are all female, make up the majority of the hive. There can only be one queen bee per hive, even though you have some incidents where there could be multiple, but that's not normal.
The worker bees are about 90% of the hive. You should want your colony to be about 90% all worker bees. Once again, the worker bees do all the work inside and outside the hive, and they are all female.
Yep. And then you have the drones, which are the males, and they're about a small percentage in the hive. And you want that to remain small because the drones don't do any work inside of the hive. Their main job is to mate with the queen. So in the process of the honey, you talk about the worker bees, they all have different jobs. They work immediately as soon as they emerge from their cells. You have nurse bees who take care of the eggs that the queen is laying. You have undertaker bees, the ones who clean out the dead bees inside of the hive. You have guard bees, they protect the entrance of the hive. You also have our forager bees. The forager bees are responsible for bringing nectar and pollen into the hive. And so how they do that is the forager bee will go out.
And they're looking for, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
When the forager bee goes out, it's really the most exciting job and most dangerous job. The reason why it's the most exciting job, because they now can get to go out and explore and visit flowers. It's kind of like traveling. And you have to be 21 days on this earth to be a forager bee. It's the oldest worker bee inside the hive. It's really exciting to get some fresh air, to travel, to enjoy some flowers and bring back local groceries to your hive or to your home. Local groceries in form of nectar, pollen, water, and propolis. The reason why it's also the most dangerous job is because you're all by yourself. You don't have your colony with you. And then you can be exposed to the slightest threats like a raindrop, wind, cloudy or foggy weather, predators like yellow jackets, hornets, dragonflies, humans, anything can happen, ants, anything that can happen while you're out foraging.
So as she retrieves that nectar from the flower, she has two stomachs, one for processing honey and one for digesting food. That nectar goes into her honey stomach and it begins to collect her enzymes. She will fly back to her colony. She is met with another worker bee. And what she will do is regurgitate that nectar for the worker bee to take into her honey stomach. And she will begin to blend that with her enzymes. And she will repeat this step with several worker bees. The last worker bee will actually place that nectar, regurgitate it into the honeycomb. Another one will come along and they'll fan out 80% of that water content that is in nectar. This is when nectar transforms into honey. Another one will come along. She'll seal that
honeycomb
with wax, and it's their stored food. It's just that some human discovered it. And so when we have enough supers that we can extract from them, we can take those frame, decap that wax. We can either place it into a extractor and they could spin out the honey out of the honeycomb, or we can do like a hand extraction where we could just crush that honeycomb and get that honey out of there by squeezing it and using a strainer and put it into a container. That container is open. Then we can fill up jars and we can place them on a shelf. You can order from us online.
And what's great and sustainable about, I think, honey harvesting is that we can take that frame that's on a foundation and just simply remove that thin layer of wax, allow that honey to pour out from the extractor. We can reuse that same honeycomb for that particular hive to refill and reuse for the next season. So that allows us to keep that honeycomb and restore it. In cases where there is no foundation or we cannot do a machine extractor, then we will have to either cut the comb and serve it as honeycomb for our customers, or we can crush the comb, allow the honey to go to a cheese extractor, and then melt that wax down into a candle.
Very neat. That's cool. That was going to be my next question. Okay, so then during this process, what are the bees doing?
So the bees are working. The bees are being busy as a bee. Now, every hive needs at least 100 pounds of honey to make it, 80 to 100 pounds of honey to make it over the winter. Here at Detroit Hives, we are for the conservation of pollinators, so we only pull for the surplus. So any hive that has over 100 pounds of honey, we pull from that surplus to them. So while we're extracting or pulling those frames out of the hive, the bees are busy minding their business. We can gently just use a feather to remove the bees from the honey frame, and then place it into another box to transport to our office.
Very cool.
So we're going to touch on the life cycles real quick. So the queen bee, it takes her 16 days to be born, but she can live up to 3 to 5 years. Then our worker bees, it takes them 21 days to be born, and they can live up to 4 to 6 weeks, possibly 8 weeks.
During the summer.
Yeah.
But during cold winter months, or when they're less active, they can live up to 9 months.
Right. And then you have our drones, and it takes them about 24 days to be born from their cell. And they can live up until pretty much the summertime, until the ladies kick them out. So since the drones don't do any work inside of the colony, and they will like to eat up the surplus, the worker bees will actually kick them out. So right now, because we have a winter, they are being kicked out of the hive. If they try to come back, those worker bees will actually bite their wings off, pick them up, and fly them away from the colony. And you won't see any more drones until the spring comes around again. Because if they let them stay in the hive, they're going to eat up all their surplus of honey. So with the worker bees, they like to ration off their honey so they can make it up into the springtime.
And they won't be working to keep the hive warm.
Right.
You know, so worker bees, they regulate the temperature of the hive all year round. When it's too hot, they work to cool it off. Mm-hmm. When it's too cold, they work to heat it up.
Yeah. So in the wintertime, anytime temperatures are 45 degrees and below, what they'll do is they'll cluster up. The queen sits in the middle of them, and they'll vibrate their wing muscles, creating that friction and providing that heat source.
So the drones will be right there with the queen eating the most of the honey. Because they won't be working to keep the hive warm. So it becomes counterproductive, and to prevent their colony from collapsing, they will kick out the drones for sustainability, for survival.
Well, it sure sounds like within these past 5 years, you've become, what do we like to call them, Candace? SMEs, subject matter experts?
That's for sure. That is for sure. And tell us, I mean, as individuals and the city of Detroit, I mean, I have to imagine you guys are just kind of becoming, you know, the face of urban bees. Tell us how that has kind of unfolded for you and maybe some of the partnerships that have developed.
Right. So, you know, when we started, we just really passionate about our mission. I think it shows. My story is a unique one. Coming from being a native Detroiter, born in the city, watching us go through everything with the city, from its good times to its bad times, to now on the verge of rebuilding itself and revitalizing itself. So I think people want to hear that story of, you know, what's happening in the city, and how we're using bees to revitalize the city of Detroit. So much so that our story went viral from being sick and learned by local honey, but more importantly, introducing bees to revitalize our community. And it's been able to attract partners and sponsors. That's how we've been able to expand in over 20 locations and even be able to create a national effort with helping to form Mohives KC, located in Kansas City, Missouri. Doing a similar project and mission, being able to find ways to revitalize vacant lots to serve as low-cost sustainable projects like apiaries or pottery habitats to provide a triple bottom line solution in our community, creating a social, environmental, and financial impact.
Very cool. So can you tell us a little bit about how are you guys getting more customers? What are you at? Is there an expansion plan? How do you seek out your customers, even though you are a 501c3?
I think it's word of mouth for the most part. That's most of the work is through word of mouth. When the customer buys our product, if they like our product, they keep coming back or they refer others. Other ways we get out more customers is through opportunities like this, from being able to share our story, being able to go to speaking events, working with students, working with community residents, providing tours, high sponsorships. When people hear about our story or when we invite others to be a part of our project, that's how we're able to attract that target audience to becoming a customer. Sometimes we target our customers. We may want to reach out to a particular corporation or a particular business or a particular community organization, and we reach out to them and say, hey, you make a good partner, or, you know, would you be interested in being able to sponsor, or would you be interested in being able to use our product in your store? So we reach out to potential customers or partners as well.
Well, and you also are pretty fair marketeers as well, do some pretty interesting things with music and art. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So once again, you know, we find ways to inspire the next generation through untraditional platforms and beekeeping, really focused on art, music, and technology. This year, we were able to work with an international producer named Nick Speed to take the sounds of our buzzing bees, our happy buzzing bees, and make an instrumental track. And what we're trying to do is definitely find ways to create melodic sounds to help, you know, promote happiness through that sound.
Well, with your permission, you know, you had a terrific video that we saw at Flight of the Honeybees. You know, we'll get that posted on our awesome WGA communication channels. We want to make sure we help get the word out and join you and helping, if you'll pardon, you know, if you'll pardon our saying so, helping you create the buzz, though. I don't think you need much help with that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Really do appreciate it. You know, we only do what we love. We only do what we love, whether we find ways to create compelling flyer advertising, because that's why I feel like if you're going to reach the next generation, you have to create things that look appealing to them or sound appealing to them. You know, so that's one way that caught my attention, you know, in school, is that as a young creative, I found things that look colorful or very design aesthetic or things that really caught my attention.
Well, one of the things I've always liked what Western Growers has done with the Innovation and Technology Center is that we called it an Innovation and Technology Center. And I don't think there's any question you're pretty fair innovators and entrepreneurial. Has the world of technology entered into your Detroit Hives activity at all, whether it's, you know, data or, you know, one of the things and one of the reasons we did the Silicon Valley Forum event a couple of weeks ago now was we were starting to see a lot of a real intersection between bees, pollination, and technology, whether it's data, improving bee health, that sort of thing. Have you encountered the tech world at all in this journey of yours?
Yeah, so far last year, we were able to partner with the University of Detroit Mercy, and they've been able to collect pollen samples, and they're still doing research to see if our areas are supporting pollinator health, if we have enough pollen resources variations to support a colony. If we want to be able to take that research and take it to the city and say, check this out, you know, our projects are working and we're successful with being able to provide a habitat for bees. And if we aren't successful, or the university isn't successful to say that these habitats are providing enough food for bees, then we need to go back and then say we need to create a better, more green space for our pollinators. But other ways of technology include, of course, like I said, being able to work with existing companies like DoorDash, finding innovative ways to get honey to people. If they don't have access to a car, if they do not have access to go to a local market to find local raw honey, we're able to get into it from a click on their phone.
Well, we, you know, just as we kind of finish up here, and I think Candace asked, but, you know, any new visions or where you kind of see all of this is going? And then I can't help but ask a product question also, since you talked about local raw honey. And it was interesting as we started to hang out with the bee community several weeks ago. You know, I had never heard of Manuka honey in New Zealand. And then you and I had a conversation. You said, well, where do you try our stuff? So what makes honey, how do you distinguish, you know, is it like wine and it's really just kind of up to the, you know, individual taste, or there's some objective criteria where when, you know, you tell the Manuka honey crowd, boy, wait till you try Detroit Hive stuff.
Yeah. So let's talk about forager bees. Forager bees can travel up to 6 miles in extreme conditions looking for local groceries. In this case, we're talking about nectar. And when they're traveling, they can either be located or where you house the honeybee hives. They can be located at a lavender farm. They can be located at an apple orchard or orange blossom farm or orchard or a clover field.
Or even like with Manuka, it's a place where there's acres and acres of Manuka.
Yeah, so within that 6 mile radius or 3 mile radius, if they're foraging 90% of that one particular crop, that would deem that particular crop that particular type of honey. It would either be lavender honey or clover honey or alfalfa honey. In cities like Detroit or urban landscape, where bees can travel up to 6 miles, there's not enough 90% of a particular crop that can deem it as one type unless you have that environment for them. But in our areas where they can travel 6 miles, they're going to visit various types of wildflowers, from mulberry trees to hawthorn apple trees to crab apple trees to lavender to visiting clover, alfalfa, to blueberries, etc. And that deems it as wildflower honey. Now, for honeybees, they require at least three variations of pollen sources for their nutritional diet. You know, new honeybees cannot survive without a variation of different type of pollen sources. So it's very crucial to their health. So it's better for their health. And actually, quite honest, wildflower honey tastes better to me as well. I prefer wildflower honey because it's a sweet medley of many different type of nectar sources that honeybees are visiting. So you get a palate of many different things. And Nicole liked to mention it compared to like assorted Skittles.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Boy, I've got to tell you, if I need any ad copy written, I'm coming to you too.
Awesome. That'd be wonderful.
Candace, do you have anything else before we wrap up here? A really enjoyable hour, Candace?
Yeah, it's been so great. I just want to know where I can get some honey.
Absolutely. So we sell our honey online on our website at DetroitHives.com or DetroitHives.org, same website. This is our shop page. You can buy our 8-ounce jar of honey. Also, if you're local in the area of Detroit, you can visit the Detroit shop located in Somerset Mall. If you're in the 42214 zip code area of Detroit, you can order our local raw honey from DoorDash. And if you catch us at a local farmer's market, make sure to pick up a jar of our deliciously dope Detroit Hives honey.
You two are good. I can't imagine Detroit having two better ambassadors than you two. We sure
appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate your time this morning, and we're gonna have some fun. You know, when we're on the radio, they tighten us up a little bit. We don't get the full hour, but when we do a podcast, all of this is preserved, and everyone is gonna have the opportunity to really enjoy our conversation. And we'll make sure other folks besides Candace know where to get your products. So it's always fun to visit and catch up with you. And thanks for joining us this morning.
Same here. And once again, thank you for having us and allowing us to share our story. Really do appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for everything you're doing for the future of agriculture. It's a really exciting story.
Appreciate
it. It is. We're going to try and get a few more folks at our industry knocking on your door. We think you're an important part of that sustainability conversation. Absolutely. So with that, good to see you both. And thanks, everyone, for joining us on another episode of Voices of the Valley. And we will be back next week. And Candace, I'll look forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Voices of the Valley podcast, brought to you today by Western Growers Association, supporting producers that grow the best medicine in the world. Find out more at WGA.com.